I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
Well, Elon Musk is now the richest person on the planet.
More than half the satellites in space are owned and controlled by one man.
Well, he's a legitimate super genius. I mean, legitimate.
He says he's always voted for Democrats, but this year it will be different. He'll vote Republican.
There is a reason the U.S. government is so reliant on him.
Elon Musk is a scam artist, and he's done nothing.
Anything he does is fascinating to people.
Welcome to Elon Inc., Bloomberg's weekly podcast about Elon Musk. It's Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm your host, David Papadopoulos. This week, it's Tesla mania. There's so much Tesla news, and most of it is bleak. For starters, we learned on Friday that the nearly 4,000 Cybertrucks that have been delivered to drivers to date have now been recalled for an issue with the accelerator pedal. And we have new reporting from Dana Hall and Ed Ludlow about what exactly went down inside Tesla and in at least one factory parking lot when it laid off 10% of its staff last week. This all comes just ahead of an earnings call that Musk will be conducting later today. Of course, for us, the Tesla earnings call means one thing: bingo. And we want to invite you, dear listener, to play along with us this evening. It's gonna be a hoot. But before we do bingo, we've gotta go into that big take story on Tesla's mounting woes that Dana Hull, who our listeners know very well, wrote with Ed Ludlow. Dana, welcome.
Hello, hello.
And Ed, who is a Bloomberg reporter and co-host of the daily Bloomberg Technology News Show. Hello, Ed.
Hey, how's it going?
As always, we also have Max Chafkin, senior reporter at Bloomberg Businessweek. Max.
Hey, David.
Hey, hey. Okay, so Dana, Ed, on Sunday night, we published your story, which has been one of the most read so far this week on the Bloomberg Terminal on .com, with the title, Elon Musk's Robotaxi Dreams Plunged Tesla into Chaos. Dana, in reporting this, what did you learn that was most surprising or telling for you in terms of the current moment the company is going through now?
So this is really a big moment. I would say that whenever a company lays off 10% of its global workforce, which in this case is more than 14,000 people, and we have reporting that Musk is gunning for actually a 20% reduction, you just run to the phones and you call as many people as possible. So Ed and I have been on the phone all week with people around the world, just trying to get a sense of what's going on internally. And what struck me the most is just how chaotic the layoff process was for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I spoke to employees who had just been recruited, who had moved their entire families across the country, who had just gone through the onboarding process and then were laid off. I talked to, you know, highly trained engineers and technicians who arrived at the Gigafactory in Nevada to a traffic jam, didn't know what was going on. They were diverted to a parking lot. Security guards were scanning their badges. And if the badge did not work, that was how you learned that you no longer had a job. And, you know, I think that layoffs suck no matter what. But I mean, these are people who joined a company that they were very proud to work at. A lot of them are highly skilled engineers. Some people had been at the company for years, and I've never seen as much anger and anguish and frustration on LinkedIn, of all places, as I have over the past week. So that really struck me. It's a sign that the layoffs were very hastily planned.
Yeah, it's not a great moment there. The Nevada factory scene is really pretty intense. You have, I believe, someone in there you cite saying it's the most humiliating and harshest, coldest sort of experience in their professional lives to be in that line, to swipe your badge And let's say your badge, first of all, the angst as you wait your turn to swipe your badge and to see if you're allowed in. And then the feeling that you must have had as you get rejected with all those people behind you watching. That's, I don't know that I've ever heard one like that, Dana.
Right. I mean, it's a level of kind of public humiliation that for many of these people, I mean, it is the most humiliating experience of their lives. That's what people are saying. And big tech companies have done layoffs before. Tesla has done big layoffs before. But now you're seeing like Tesla layoff content on YouTube and on TikTok and all over LinkedIn. And the fury and the anguish, I mean, it's really going to impact the brand. It's going to impact recruiting going forward. And I just think the reputation of the company has really shifted in the public mind over the past week or so.
Now, Ed, how about for you? What are the things that struck you the most?
Yeah, I think this was one item amidst a sort of chaotic period of headlines. And speaking about layoffs is never pleasant. But in his memo, Musk outlined the rationale was like cost reduction and productivity. And I think as the days went by and we spoke to some pretty key sources high up in the company, it had very little to do with either productivity or cost reduction.
Then this is like him coming back to Tesla and being like, what the hell's going on here?
But actually, the sense I got over a number of days speaking to people pretty high up in the company as well is that it had very little to do with it at all. I think Musk has been really busy at a lot of other companies, and he, for whatever reason, started paying attention again at Tesla. And how it was explained to me is that he was very upset and angry about the first quarter delivery numbers, and his logic was very basic, that if deliveries were down 20% sequentially quarter on quarter, then they should just cut headcount by 20%. And this was kind of what he outlined to all the business leaders. He gave each of the unit leaders or team leaders the same headcount reduction goal and aggressive targets to cut headcount. And, you know, it was seen by other leaders in Tesla as being classic Musk psychology. He wants people to be paranoid about Tesla being too big, and he wants them to have a psychology of being lean and not bloated, and he didn't hesitate to do it with, frankly, pretty savage effect.
Yeah, so this is, I suppose, going back to the first sentence of your story, I guess Musk invoking demon mode, as his biographer Walter Isaacson says. But Max, what Ed was just saying there, something really jumped out at me, which is this is a bit perhaps a reflection of a CEO who was frankly distracted by his other half dozen companies and suddenly comes back and is like, what the hell is going on here? This is maybe perhaps part of the price you pay when your CEO also has all these side gigs.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen that with Tesla over and over again. There's also a sense I have anyway that this is in part a performance, right? Elon sees being extremely hardcore and treating employees, holding employees to a high standard as like part of Tesla's, as like part of what makes Tesla special. So I agree, like it does, it seems very chaotic. And the crazy thing is, this is in some ways less chaotic than the product stuff, which we'll talk about later. But I do think he's at least maybe partly leaning into this because he thinks that it's a way to get performance out of people, you know, rightly or wrongly. I think a lot of the Tesla employees would disagree with that.
I'd also like to note that to Max's point about this being a performance, like let's keep in mind why the performance is happening. Musk is sort of leaning into this idea that he's a wartime general coming back to like rally the troops around this robotaxi vision that Wall Street is very leery of. But also, this is a guy who wants to get paid. I mean, what's striking to me about the chaos of the past week is in the middle of the night on Monday, they lay off 10% of the workforce. And then on Wednesday, Tesla drops its proxy and the board is like, we want to do another vote on Elon's pay package from 2018. They set up this whole like website to kind of rally shareholder support. So this is like a CEO who is running five other companies is now very much like back in the saddle, sending out orders, you know, trying to like redirect the company, this new vision, but he also really wants to get paid. And so I just want to make sure that our listeners and investors are aware that the kind of wider context of Musk kind of seemingly to be focused back on Tesla is that he really wants that shareholder vote in June for people to approve his you know, billions of dollar pay package.
And Dana, in that sense, this is rough timing for Musk as he does try to push through that same pay package that a Delaware judge had struck down, that $56 billion package, and said it was illegal. As they try to push it through again now, bad timing. The stock is collapsing. You're laying off workers. You're trying to come up with a new path for growth going forward. Is the vote on this pay package suddenly in question that he's going to win? Or is the cult of Elon still so strong among shareholders that this will sail through once again?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I think Ed and I have talked to a lot of shareholders who are quite frustrated with the state of the company. There will always be this kind of very diehard long-term Elon believers who are super into it, but they're like, you know, posting on X, like trying to get people to vote for it. And they're sharing this website. The fact that the website even exists is very telling to me that the investor support may not be as strong as it was. And there have been some like large, you know, retail shareholders like Leo from Singapore, I think it is. He's like publicly said that he's not going to go for it. And so you're seeing some real fracturing among the retail base, which is a really big part of the shareholder base.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Ed, are you detecting similar, that there is suddenly some question about this topic?
I mean, the challenge of the last few days and with earnings is going to be trying to understand what links the layoffs with the robo-taxi thesis with a $25,000 EV. And on the $25,000 EV part, you know, some of the big institutional investors, you know, we're talking about legacy finance firms on Wall Street, a mass market affordable vehicle is a big part of the bull thesis for many of them. And so it'll be interesting if in the first instance it's true that Elon's not really that interested in a $25,000 EV anymore, how that passes with the institutional investor base. But what they have in common is that it's Elon's kind of way or the highway right now. You know, that's certainly the sense that Dana and I got from all these phone calls, that whatever the strategy ends up being and however it goes down with the investor base, Elon's basically saying, I am now focused on robo-taxis and you're either coming with me or you're not. And you know, conversely, you know, I think Dana and I also got the sense that a lot of those recent departures from Tesla where people left of their own volition are because they were like, hey, I thought I was working on, this transition to sustainable energy and electrifying transport. I didn't sign up for robo-taxi. And robo-taxi is the direction the company's going in right now.
Yeah, it's like a huge departure from everything I think a lot of people, including a lot of Elon Musk fans, thought they believed. You know, last week we saw this kind of insane thing, which is a lot of pro-Tesla Wall Street investors coming out and essentially saying, he's not going to cancel the $25,000 electric vehicle, because if he did, you know, the stock would tank. Like they're counting on this for growth. I think a lot of these Wall Street guys, a lot of these investors are willing to go along with this kind of pie in the sky robo-taxi idea as long as there's some clear concrete growth in the meantime. And Elon in all sorts of ways is signaling that he's willing to give that up. And again, that's like Ed's saying, like that is in certain ways like turning his back on a big subset of the people who believed in them and of course his employees. It's stunning and crazy, and it doesn't, you know, it's possible Elon Musk is very good at like sort of finessing things. He's an amazing marketer. You know, maybe he'll find a way to communicate this in a way that kind of calms everyone down. But at the moment, you know, it really feels like a dire situation, a situation where it's hard to see how you come out of this next earnings call, and there isn't even more panic than there is right now.
We're going to continue, Max, for a second with you in the robo-taxi. But before we do, Dana, for the uninitiated, give us a little bit of robo-taxi 101, exactly how it is to work if and when it comes to fruition.
So the idea of a robo-taxi has been around since 2016, when Elon Musk kind of published that famous master plan, Part Deux. But it's weird because, like, on one hand, your car is supposed to be a robo-taxi. Like, you know, our friend Ed Ludlow here recently leased a Model Y with FSD on it. And the idea is that eventually Ed's car will be great enough that it will function as a robo-taxi. Mm-hmm. But what Elon is talking about now is unveiling, like, a dedicated robo-taxi that will be part of a Tesla-operated fleet, like an autonomous electric kind of Waymo. And so those two ideas are almost in conflict with each other. Like, why would, like, so if I own a Tesla and with the promise that it's going to be self-driving, why does Tesla then need to make a different car that is a dedicated robo-taxi? I thought that my car was a robo-taxi. So just the messaging around this is very confusing. But the idea is that Tesla will run its own fleet. I mean, they're going after, they're basically going to take on Waymo.
So if I've got this right, I will both own a Y or whatever it may be that that I drive or my robot drives for me. And then when I'm sleeping at night, I unleash the robot and I say, hey, you know what? Go make me a little money. And it drives around at night and picks up, you know.
Exactly.
In addition to that, then there is the, apparently, as we understand it, the Tesla fleet of purely Maxes. He's astonished by all this. He doesn't know, right?
I mean, just like we've just entered the realm of like fantasy land, basically, which, I mean, it could be worth, again, like the bull thesis here has always been Tesla swallows the entire automotive industry. And all along, people have thought, well, to do that, you need to basically have self-driving cars because that will make it, you know, that'll just make the question of like, does your car have better design, like, or is it faster, whatever. That'll be totally irrelevant. But again, I've said this before, like, there's no clear path to make this happen. You don't just like going from like, oh, I have really good cruise control to I'm going to sleep tonight and my car is going to like, you know, drive, you know, Ed and Dana around San Francisco while they're drinking or whatever. Like, there's a big gap there, like an enormous gap. And so the issue is like, how long does it take to cross that gap? I think if you talk to most experts in autonomy, you're talking about a period that's going to be like a decade or more.
Yeah, and that's why, Max, the stock is collapsing. And rather right now than Tesla swallowing the entire auto market, Tesla's, in horse racing terms, is coming back to the field. It's coming back to the pack, and it is, you know, day by day, it is still has a large lead, but it's coming back to the rest of the competitors. Now, in his, he at one point, I think, had a tweet or an eex last week in which, Max, to your point, he said, I'm not quite betting the company on this, effectively, but going balls to the wall on autonomy is blindingly obvious. Now, Max, my question for you is, how does going balls to the wall on something compared to like normal hardcore, is this like hardcore to the fifth power or what? How do I understand?
He's sort of implying that in the hierarchy of hardcoreness,
yes,
it goes balls to the wall. And then if you get up into another gear, you're in extremely hardcore or whatever, bet the company mode, I think. I don't know, but it sure doesn't sound like he's about to release like a really cool $25,000 car that you can buy next year. And like, there's going to be some effort to not bury that car on this earnings call, because if they do, it'll be very bad for the stock. But I think in the car business, historically, you need to release new models of car or your sales go down. And Elon Musk is making like a very different bet, a bet that he can use software and the force of his personality and, you know, maybe some intangibles to sort of change the equation, get people to just keep buying the current lineup for some time.
In addition to all this, you also have, as we mentioned at the top, the recall of almost 4,000 Cybertrucks. Cybertruck was the shiny new thing. I kind of thought that was a fairly high number. 4,000, all right, they got some out the door, right?
So 4,000 Cybertrucks, for me, it's too soon to know. Like, is it good? Is it bad? Like, you just don't really know. Like, how much of that is sort of demand being not as good as you'd hope for a car with 2 million, you know, initial reservations? How much of it is just, you know, this is a difficult car to make, as we've discussed? You know, it could, with the Model 3, they were able to start from what looked like very small numbers and eventually get up to very big numbers. I suppose the same thing could happen before. But like, when you see headlines like it's beating the Hummer EV, it kind of hits at the problem with the Cybertruck, which is that like it does not seem like this is going to be the kind of like mass market, this vision of like Tesla swallowing the automotive industry. It's like not happening. Instead, it's like
too fringe.
It's captured a very big, very wealthy, arguably very important corner of the market, but hasn't really been able to move beyond that. And I think one of the reasons is because Elon Musk himself can't quite see beyond that, right? He's like an amazing intuitive marketer. It's not clear he's ever understood how to sell cars to people who aren't like him.
Dana, for those out there who are inclined to say, oh, this is all a tempest in a teapot, and that this is the critics and the weak-hearted screaming the sky is falling, what's their argument?
Well, their argument is that Elon Musk is the greatest genius of our generation and that, you know, he's obviously really confident about how awesome their neural nets are if he's going all out for autonomy and that now is a great time to buy. So, you know, I mean, there are people that believe that.
You know, we did our best in the big take to try and give some of that clarity on where Elon Musk is directing his troops on a robotaxi or a cheaper EV model. But now's kind of the moment where he has to explain it, because I think the downward pressure on the stock year to date reflects a lot of what we've discussed, that price cuts had their limit. They cut to as deep as they could, and they still built out inventories of supply. They face a lot of competition in China. And now Musk seems to be focused not on the business of selling EVs to consumers around the world, but the big picture of a robotaxi. So the sense I've certainly got is we just want to know the basics. Like, what's the plan here, Elon?
Okay. So, Dana, later today, first quarter earnings, full earnings are out. What exactly are we expecting?
Well, I mean, the numbers are going to be bad. I think it's just a question of how bad are they? You can look at all the typical metrics like EPS, revenue, gross margins. But as most longtime Tesla watchers know, the real thing is the tenure of the call. Like, is Elon Musk expansive and confident and ebullient? And does he sell the vision? Or is he like super snippy and like tells the Wall Street analysts that their questions are boneheaded? And does he sort of get really annoyed and like go to YouTube? I mean, so it's really like the language and his tone that is going to be the big indicator for Wall Street, I think.
Is dad in a good mood or
right.
is dad in a bad mood?
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Okay, so we're talking about the call now, the call that Musk will have with investors after the earnings come out, which, you know what, you know, Max, that means it's bingo time.
Okay. I mean, it's the only part of the call that I'm paying attention to.
Right, clearly. So for our listeners, remind them, how does Tesla earnings bingo work?
Okay, so first of all, got to give credit to Dana Hull, the person who created this, which actually, to be fair, is sort of like a meme thing that like the larger community of Elon Musk fans, even critics, like they have noticed that he tends to use these kind of repeating tropes. And as a result, people have made for years these bingo cards, which we made. We did one last quarter. It was really fun.
Ed, you took part, right? You really seem to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I played it. I played in full, and I'm going to play in full again this time around.
Brilliant.
And it's tricky. There was some, Max and I found some gentlemen's agreements on what did or didn't constitute a particular square, but we'll try again.
Maybe we need an actual judge.
Yeah, basically, Ed and I, it's like a secret committee that consists of me and Ed on IB talking about whether or not something, you know, technically, I think last year it was insulting a philosophical framework, or sorry, last quarter, anyway, we've got some new, we got some new stuff. A lot of it acknowledges this kind of robo-taxi, the questions over the robo-taxi.
Yeah. So Dan, hit us with what are the biggest additions we have in this quarter's bingo, and what are the biggest things we've cut out?
I mean, we added in a lot of like sort of robo-taxi-esque lingo. We've got regulatory approval. We have limiting factor, profound, end-to-end artificial intelligence, reasonably optimistic, force multiplier, and LLMs. Now, some of those phrases are things that Elon has said before, but in the context of this call, like I would expect him to go all in on that.
Balls to the wall, if you will, which is I-5, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I see it. Yeah, there it is. Brilliant.
We have a new color. Last quarter, it was red. This time, we're green for Earth Day.
And am I to read anything into that?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of context here, David. Mm. Green for Earth Day, you know, April Earth Day, Earth Days this week. Green is the color of money, which Musk wants for himself and for his shareholders. Green with envy. He's very envious of NVIDIA, and he's very envious of OpenAI. So there's a lot of, you know...
Think of it as
a drop. We're dropping clues for our audience here.
I gotcha. All right, Max, if we get bingo, okay, if we get it, what's the line that cracks, you know, that gives it up? Where's it going to happen?
I have no idea. That the beauty of bingo is that it's completely, it's open-ended. I do want to call our attention to, I think it's B3.
Yeah.
We had a few different countries last time. This time, a different country missed. B3 is India. Now, remember last week we were talking about he was supposed to go to India, which has been canceled.
It got canceled,
He said because he has to focus on Tesla. And this feels like a bit of a long shot, but I do wonder if he will acknowledge this because, you know, India, that was a potential, you know, new factory, potential market. Could be a big financial swing. So we'll see if he brings that up.
I mean, Elon, you can't cancel a trip like that. We did an entire segment of this show on it. That was that was a low blow. Now, for listeners out there, a couple things. Remember, everyone, you can get your own card at Bloomberg.com/Elon Inc. You can follow along as Ed plays on his Twitter account at Ed Ludlow. And right, Max, also on Bloomberg's homepage.com.
That's right. We'll be blogging the earnings, and I am under special instructions to keep an eye on the bingo card during the call. So I'll be doing that and consulting with Ed if there are any questions about whether we've got a square or not.
I ran this through our fancy Bloomberg models, and the percent I came up with, the percent chance that we're going to hit this is 17%. So almost 1 in 5, which is, you know, I feel like it's pretty good. It's like, you know, it gives everyone a little something to look forward to. There's a chance. Now, Dana, have we figured out yet what happens if we hit it? Do we all just start frantically screaming bingo? Are there gifts for all our listeners? What do we do?
Well, you know, this bingo project is a work in progress. I mean, one downside is that everyone has the same card. So potentially we could all be winners. But I think it's just a way to kind of get everyone to really listen to this earning call as a linguist would for the key phrases that Musk uses this time around, which is, you know, frankly, one of the most pivotal earnings calls of his career. I mean, he's been on every earnings call that Tesla's ever had since they went public in June of 2010, except for one of them. And, you know, tens of thousands of people tune in. So we hope that you will tune in also and play along with us.
If we win, you need to buy a Cybertruck.
No. Okay, so we're now going to do our feud of the, I guess this is a feud. So this will go
it's
in our
feud.
It's feud-ish of the week. Max, we've got Tucker Carlson, Joe Rogan, and Elon Musk. Do tell.
So on Monday morning, when I was expecting to see, you know, further clarification about the robo-taxi or perhaps, you know, how Elon Musk was bringing this new, you know, extremely hardcore approach to this chapter of Tesla, he appeared to instead be sort of disagreeing repeatedly, dunking on, amplifying various dunks on former Fox News host Tucker Carlson, who until very recently, someone who I thought of as an ally. Tucker went on Joe Rogan, said a lot of funny things.
Such as?
I think we have a clip.
Let's play the clip.
Evolution is real. And if there is this
is
constant,
real?
I don't know, but it's visible. Like, you can measure it in certain animals.
You can measure adaptation.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that evolution. In fact, I think we've kind of given up on the idea of evolution. The theory of evolution as articulated by Darwin is like kind of not true.
Right? In what sense?
Well, in the most basic sense, the idea that, you know, all life emerged from a single cell organism and over time, and there would be a fossil record of that, and there's not.
There are lines for Elon Musk. Yeah. I think we've learned that on the course of doing this show. And like once when someone goes like way too deep down, like a scientific rabbit hole, he gets off the bus. And he...
Right. And saying that Darwin is a fraud and that evolution is a hoax would be that red line that's been crossed here.
Yeah. Somebody wrote a criticizing tweet and Elon replied, sigh. So, you know, now Tucker, you know, former Fox News host Tucker Carlson.
Didn't he have a show on X?
He has a show on X.
He has a show on X.
He is arguably the most important content creator on X. Now, Elon, there was some sort of chat around this, people saying, oh, Elon's over Tucker Carlson. He said, no, I'm just, you know, friends can disagree with one another. But it does feel like there's a bit of an effort, maybe, dare I say, having something to do with the fact that they're about to report earnings, they're worried about, you know, finding buyers for this car. He does seem to be trying to cut a little bit of distance between himself and Tucker.
Oh, you're reading that sort of thing into it. Like this is him suddenly worrying about how he's viewed by the base who
That was my thought as I was looking at it on Monday morning. Although I have to say, he did tweet a bunch of other crazy stuff. So I don't know if it may just be that like there are certain lines that Elon Musk just won't cross, and one of them is saying that everyone knows that evolution is false.
Dana, does this ultimately, do we get a cage match here at some point between Tucker and Elon, or this is way too much of a low simmering spat?
Yeah, I think it's feud-ish. Maybe a low simmering spat is better. I don't think it really rises to full on feud just yet. I'll keep an eye on it. I mean, Max is keeping a closer eye than I am.
Yeah, there's Max only so is, much Max Elon is related so content. Into the feuds. You know?
There's only so much Elon content that one can absorb, report, and produce in a given news cycle.
I will say it's kind of a weird red line with Tucker, if this is your red line, because he said a lot of controversial stuff in the past. I mean, he made like an entire documentary about testicle tanning. And that was okay,
know.
I guess.
I don't know. I think we need to end the show right there. That's it. Max, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Ed, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. And this is going to be the most important earnings, maybe, in Tesla's history, but certainly the most important earnings bingo.
Dana.
Always a pleasure.
This episode was produced by Stacey Wong. Naomi Shaven and Rehan Harmansi are our senior editors. The idea for this very show also came from Rehan. Blake Maples handles engineering, and we get special editing assistance from Jeff Grocott. Our supervising producer is Magnus Henriksen. The Elon Inc. theme is written and performed by Taka Yasuzawa and Alex Sugiura. Brendan Francis Noonan is our executive producer, and Sage Bauman is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. I'm David Papadopoulos. If you have a minute, rate and review our show. It'll help other listeners find us. See you next week.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.